This is Disabled Girls Who Lift. We are reclaiming what's rightfully ours one podcast at a time. It's Mary Beth, Chloe, and Marcia bringing you the thoughts and unpopular topics to get you out of that ableist comfort zone. Hello, hello. Welcome to another episode of Disabled Girls Who Lift. We have someone super awesome joining us today, a strong supporter of the podcast. This is Marcia from South Florida, land of the Seminole tribes.
And it's Mary Beth in California. We are on Ohlone land and so grateful. Our guest joining us today, Cassie Ahrens. She has been a longtime friend, a longtime listener, one of the best supporters of the Disabled Girls Who Lift podcast since our birth, I think. And we're almost at our 1 year anniversary. Oh my gosh.
That's so exciting.
Cassie comes on over from Chicago. Chi-town, we're going to talk a little bit about depression, just generalized anxiety, how we handle and manage mental health, a little bit of diet culture, and what we experience, especially online and in powerlifting. So thanks so much for joining us, Cass.
Hello. Well, thanks so much for having me. I'm excited to be here. And I like your guys' intro of talking about what land you guys are on. I believe this is Illiniwek land, but I'm not quite sure. So I'm going to look that up afterwards.
Yeah, yeah. It's easy to Google. So if you're wondering what the hell we're talking about, just Google whose land am I on or what native land am I on, and you'll find the website because I can't think of the URL off the top of my head. But anyways, back to Cassie. So Cassie, so you write a lot about disability and mental health awareness. And most of us understand mental health, like what it means, not necessarily we have good feelings about it or there's not stigmas, but we get what it means. Like, okay, depression or anxiety or something. But people say disability and then they see you and I'm sure people are like, are you sure, Cassie? So I'd love to hear what it's like as someone with severe scoliosis. Like, is that your whole life? How has that been? Is disability a new identity for you? It's a very loaded question, so take it down whatever road you want.
Yeah, so having the mental illness and scoliosis, we'll start with scoliosis. So I've had scoliosis diagnosed in like seventh grade, and then I kind of never really saw any doctors after that, unfortunately. And started to experience a lot of pain in college, and that's kind of when I finally got an x-ray by a doctor, you know, years after. They just kind of told me, oh, you have scoliosis, but it didn't look like I really had a severe one, so they just kind of ignored it. But then it turned out it was really bad. I've kind of had it forever, and the pain has been on and off, but I've never really, I never really identified it with a disability because it never prevented me from doing anything really ever. In addition to that, I've also had depression pretty much probably starting around the same time, honestly. I wasn't diagnosed until college with major depression. Yeah, kind of like you said with both of those, like people look at me and they're like, you're not disabled. Went through college. I have a successful career. I'm lifting, and it's definitely been a new to identify as disabled, and kind of mentally like unsure, like, do I fit in with the disabled world? Like, you know, is mental illness considered like a disability? And as I've been learning about like more about it and more about my diagnoses and how they affect me, I've definitely identified more with it. And it's really helped me to realize like, oh, disabled doesn't mean you're like not capable of doing stuff, which we all obviously know. It's just, you have different needs. And like, I know I need to rest more. And sometimes it's a hard fight to make myself be okay with those extra rest days. But discovering this podcast and you guys has helped me a ton in just appreciating who I am, regardless of whatever diagnoses I may have.
Right. And I just love too that, and we're talking about this community and whether or not we fit in, realizing that there's so much gray area and not one disability is like the other, even if we, you know, identify as all having SCI or all having limb differences, all of our experiences are going to be different. And that's the beauty of this. Like, I remember one of my first conversations with Marcia when she was still talking to herself and out loud about her spoony self, you know, everyone's going to have a different experience, especially online.
Well said.
Yeah. Yeah.
All around well said. I am curious of what happened in college. You like,
yeah.
Are you good? That's a lot of stress. Like, everything is all at once. Like, what happened? Were you just out on your own for the first time? Or is it just...
What kind of pain was it?
Yeah, what's going on? The pain, the depression, everything seemed to be obvious to you once you hit college.
Yeah, college was definitely... college was great. There was a lot of great things that happened in college. But it was really hard. I mean, I was in a top engineering school, and that's a lot of stress. That's, you know, just studying a lot. And I think too, just like going from having a regular schedule in high school, like, you know, I'm forced to go to school every single day, all day, I have track practice, and kind of having that set schedule, I think helped me a little bit. And then in college, it kind of, that goes away and you have to create it yourself. And then additionally, the added component was I was binge drinking in college a ton, which definitely does not help mental health. And I had to
guess that was your immediate coping strategy.
I think it was just I went to a big party school, met a lot, hung out with a lot of people that partied often. And yeah, it was a huge stress relief at the time that, you know, when you're 17, 18 years old, you don't really know how to deal with stress in healthy ways sometimes. And that was my way. It was what everybody else was doing. And it definitely brought out a lot of the stuff. I also had I have a lot of family stuff that was happening. And so, yeah, it kind of all at that point really compiled. I realized, I was like, oh, and I mean, I had definitely experienced symptoms in high school, but I was just like, oh, I'm just tired all the time. I just need to sleep a lot. Or this being sad and in my room by myself all the time is like, I'm just a shy person that doesn't have any friends, you know, like it wasn't, I didn't really know what it was going on. And so in college I was dating a partner at the time who was like, hey, I think you might have depression. Maybe you should go see a counselor. And that kind of was the first time I was like, oh yeah, maybe I do. Because my mom actually had, she passed away, but she was diagnosed by bipolar. So I always knew that it was in the family. I just never really connected my symptoms with what hers were because they weren't the same.
Mm-hmm. And it's interesting too, that you had experienced the two binaries, you know, being out, being social, drinking and being with tons of different people, thinking that you're extroverted and this level of toxicity. Because, I mean, we all drank. I mean, especially the first, second year, you're going into a new environment. And then once all of that is over and you're coming back to your Monday, it's like, oh, wait, where am I with myself?
Mm-hmm.
That's all pretty interesting that I think a lot of people start to discover in their 20s, early 20s.
Yeah, totally.
Hopefully.
Yeah, I know. Where are we at? Who am I? And then that was also the time when you went to go see a doctor for another x-ray, especially since you developed a lot more.
Yeah. So I think, I mean, I don't know exactly why the pain was getting worse, but I'd assume carrying around stuff on my back all day long. I don't know. It just started to get worse. And yeah, so I went to a doctor or I went to a chiropractor. Well, actually, no, I went to a doctor for the first time in college and they just said, oh yeah, you have a little bit of scoliosis. We'll send you to physical therapy. So I went to physical therapy and it helped definitely. And then it started to a few years later, it started to feel pain again after I graduated. And that's when I finally got an x-ray. So, and that was at a chiropractor, which I find very interesting that no doctors did x-rays, but a chiropractor did an x-ray. So it was my first kind of experience with the healthcare system not really helping people.
Healthcare doesn't really care.
Yeah.
Interesting. Never heard that one before.
Yeah. So it kind of, it also made me realize just how much you have to advocate for yourself and continue to just keep seeing different doctors over and over again until you find something that works. Because I did ended up, once I saw my x-ray, I went to a spinal specialist, a spine surgeon for scoliosis, just to get an idea of, you know, what are we looking at? Is this something that's surgery? So to give you an idea for scoliosis, they rate it by varying degrees. And so anything greater than 10 degrees is considered scoliosis. And then anything over 50 is usually required, or they recommend surgery. I am right at around 50 degrees, two curves at 50. So, you know, when I went to see them, they were kind of like, well, you know, we could do surgery, but we don't really know that that's going to help anything. And so they recommended against it, which I'm really grateful for, because I've heard of surgeons who would recommend surgery at the littlest thing. But with that surgeon, he was very much like, yeah, the only thing that's going to really happen most likely is you're just going to get arthritis in your spine earlier and feel old. And I was like, awesome. I appreciate that.
Keep it real. Thanks, bro.
Yeah. So it was an interesting experience. That's for sure. But I always recommend a second opinion. Went to go get a second opinion. He was very helpful. And he had the same recommendation of just keeping an eye on it, see if it gets worse. Because once you're fully grown, there's it's not likely that it's going to change much, but it can still change. It can still, especially like hormone changes or various different things can cause it to increase. So we're just keeping an eye on it for now and seeing what happens.
Cool.
Which is kind of weird to just be like, yeah, we're just going to wait and see what happens.
Yeah, it's funny because it's not even really what they teach, well, at least in my program for physical therapy. It was like, okay, they have scoliosis. These are the things you do. And then if it's really bad, they get surgery. The end.
Yeah. Just learn how to work around it and adapt and not fuck it up anymore.
Yeah. When I see people like you, Cassie, online, and then there was someone else that reached out to us from like a Page Foundation. She does like dancers with scoliosis. I'm like, what? Wait, what do you mean with scoliosis? That didn't cure that? That's what we learned. What do you mean living with? Huh?
Yeah.
What does that mean? That's wild. So so you mentioned in high school you did track.
Yeah.
And then college, what happened? Did you keep doing sports, or is that when you started lifting?
Yeah, so I did like track and cross country. I did gymnastics for a few years too, actually, in high school. And then in college, I actually did stay on. I did the club track team for a couple years. In track, we did a ton of lifting. So I had experience with it throughout all my track years, just because it's very important for any sort of runner to be doing some sort of lifting also. And so I had experience with it, and then I kind of quit working out in general. And towards the end of college, I would go lift a few times. And so I didn't really pick up powerlifting until a couple of years ago. I just kind of felt lost in like what I was doing. You know, I had always been part of a team, and I was like, how do I stay active now that don't have anything? So I dialed around a few different things and kind of fell into powerlifting, and it's kind of stuck since. I really enjoy it.
And in terms of the pain, have you had to adapt a lot of the ways that you do either main lifts or just how you handle accessories, or even just, you mentioned you had to rest a lot. Is that more of a mental health thing, or are you talking about also in terms of your your actual spine health?
It's definitely more mental health. My spine, honestly, the only thing I really have sometimes an issue with is deadlift. When I first started lifting, because like I actually also have a fracture in my low back, which doesn't help. And so when I first started deadlifting, I was like having excruciating pain where I like couldn't walk for a couple days, and I was like, well, I guess I am done lifting. And I actually, when I moved to Chicago, I started working with a coach here, shout out to Tom O'Neill, at Rockwell Barbell. And so we switched to sumo because it just puts less stress on your back in general. Mm-hmm. And he, helped me figure out a position where I literally have not had that pain since I switched to figuring out my, sort of positioning for deadlift. And then, I mean, the biggest thing is I just have to be careful with, my movement patterns. So if I'm doing anything dynamic, I just have to make sure that I'm being really careful on how I'm just very conscious of my form, which honestly I think benefits me. And for as far as accessories, like, I really try to do a lot of single arm or single leg, isolation, because I have a lot of imbalances and they're not going to go away, obviously, but doing the best I can to keep those as balanced as possible, just because, you know, I'm going to favor certain sides. There's not really much I can do about it. So accessories help me to make sure I'm staying balanced on those main lifts. But yeah, as far as the rest component, it's definitely more the depression sort of. It's fatiguing. It really can be stuff. There's some days where I'm just tired, like making breakfast, and that's just not going to be a good day for a squat day. And I just have to accept that sometimes. Or, you know, if I just need 3 days rest in a row because I'm just so exhausted, I just take it, because it's better for me to take those 3 days off than try to push myself and then have no more energy and completely just crash and burn for the next, you know, month or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. So that's what I've kind of been learning, is balancing that time.
Marcy, isn't she kind of like the perfect client example after our last episode talking about like pain management post like injury, or just learning how to do unilateral movements, because we've all got imbalances.
Yeah, we all do. We do. Yeah, that's exactly what we were just talking
like
about.
Like word for word.
Word for word. That's like, so funny.
All PTs
look telepathic.
Am I what?
Are you telepathic by chance? That's one of your powers.
Yeah.
I think it's interesting though, because there are people out there that call themselves spoonies, which is in generic terms anyone that's chronically ill. So chronic depression could be a chronic illness. You could call yourself a spoonie, and all those kind of things that you're saying are the same kind of things that I experience. Like, you know what, today's just not going to be the day, and that's fine. Instead of being like, oh, I gotta get after it, like, oh man, I had two bagels today, or like, you know, some stupid shit, like, nah, I'm not.
Totally. And I think you know, the more I've learned about like chronic illness, I never identified it with it before. And I think it has to do so much with like mental illness stigma, because it is like mental illness affects your personality, or it affects your, a lot of people think it reflects your character or whatever, because you know, what's happening is, you know, it affects your behavior and or not so much your behavior, but a little bit, just like your physical state. And I think though, you know, especially when you first are learning about mental illness, you know, you think like, oh, I just have to like fix this in my head. It's just my own problem that I have to fix, and I can fix it. And that's obviously not the case. It's an illness, and learning to associate it with an illness has helped me to just, I think, like be more compassionate and take care of myself more. because it's not something where I'm like, oh, I'm just lazy or I'm just whatever, I'm not as productive or whatever it might be, whatever negative things I have to say about myself to my in my head. It's helped me to be like, no, I'm sick. It's like Monday, for instance, I had a bad day and I ended up sleeping like most of the day and all my plans went out the window. And, you know, I was really upset, obviously, but, you know, the next day I was like, it's okay. You were sick. You had a sick day.
Mm-hmm.
And you allowed yourself to rest and now you're ready to go or a little bit better, feel a little bit better to go for today.
Yeah.
So.
And recognizing that a reset is good too. Mm-hmm. If you didn't have that reset, then that'll mean that the next week for a full week, you'll probably be off. But it sounds like you've come to a really good maturity level, knowing when you need to stop, knowing when you need to be so hard on yourself, or sorry, not so hard on yourself.
Right. And it's still like a work in progress and it's taken a lot of work, I think, to get to this place to realize, you know, when is it that I need to push myself and when do I need to take a step back? Because I don't, you know, I think we, a lot of times it's talking about giving yourself rest and we talk about that. But we don't always know, it's hard to tell when the difference is when we can push ourselves and when we do need to take that step back. And I think it really just takes time to push yourself the times you don't need to and take some extra rest and been like, oh, maybe I could have pushed myself a little. And I think that's just like that progress of, you know, learning when those days work and just being kind to yourself in general. That's the biggest thing that I've learned is just trying to be kind to myself no matter what.
Yeah, you got to figure it out. It's lifelong. And nobody's going to know you better than you. And, you know, some people have like generic advice and that might not always work. Maybe it does, maybe it doesn't. But I think a lot of times we find people that are saying things online and then we connect with them and that's cool. But then we follow the advice and we're like, oh, it didn't work. I must be a loser. Like,
right.
You have to figure it out for yourself.
Or these quote unquote motivational speakers that are like, don't let depression take over your life. Don't let this chronic illness take over
choose
your
happiness.
Productivity. Like, fuck you.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I have such a love-hate relationship with self-help books in general.
Yeah.
Because there's definitely pieces where you're like, yes, I can take control of my life. But then, you know, there's that toxic portion that's like, I also have this uncontrollable, you know, thing that kind of takes control of my life sometimes. And so it's a matter of managing that.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're selling, now that people coined that phrase, I've seen toxic positivity. That's what they're selling.
Yeah.
And so if you're supposed to be learning yourself and what coping mechanisms work for you without unpacking the things that don't make you feel good, you're not going to get anywhere.
Right.
So like just being like, oh, it could always be better. It could always be worse. I'm going to choose happiness. I'm going to take control. And you don't spend any time thinking about, all right, but what about that one time where I felt like I couldn't choose? What did I do that day? Like if you don't acknowledge that, who gives a shit? It could be worse for somebody else. You or you. You're not living somebody else's life.
Totally. Totally.
Like, and that kind of attitude just kills me too.
Yeah, it's hard for me. And then when I have friends who are like, oh, they'll be telling me, they're like, oh, this isn't anything like as bad as like you've had to deal with. And I'm like, that doesn't matter at all. We're talking about you and right. You have a different experience than I do. And I actually, kind of talking about that, one of the biggest things that has helped me is, I don't know if you've heard of like dialectical statements or like dialectical thinking. So we learned this in therapy and it's like and statements where, you know, you can say, you know, other people have it worse and this is still difficult for me. So it's like, it doesn't have to be either or, both can be true at the same time. And realizing that it's like, oh, like, yeah, there are people that have it worse. Putting that into perspective, but then this still also sucks. Like, I don't want to go through this. This doesn't make my life any easier. And realizing that, like, several things can be true that aren't necessarily that are like opposites or whatever.
It's not mutually exclusive.
Right. Has helped me a ton when I'm like dealing with certain issues. So dialectical statements is a good one to look up.
For sure. And I think Ilya might've said it way back when we had them on, that we're just like obsessed with the binary and not just talking about gender, just everything. You're lazy or productive. You're disabled or you're not. You're sick or you're well. Like we live in the gray area. That's just where we are.
And so how do you incorporate this mindset into powerlifting and training into competition? Have you competed before?
Yeah, I've competed twice. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think a big thing for me is, you know, on competition day, especially like a lot of us have big idea, like neither of my meets went as planned. And I would say that's true for majority of people at some point that their meets don't go as planned. And the big thing for me is just like taking that thinking and remembering like I didn't do as well as I want and I know that I'm still capable of doing good, you know, doing better. That this lift doesn't define me. And, you know, it's kind of the same things we all talk about, like this just one time. This is just one thing that we enjoy. And this one moment doesn't define your whole powerlifting career. And then in general, I just kind of like with training, I use the mindset of like, I'm doing the best I can every single day, and it's going to look different every single day. And sometimes I'm not going to be going into it being like, I'm not going to be that person that's going to, you know, write out my gym schedule and hit it every single day, because it's just not possible. And there's plenty of people who can do that, and that's great. And so just realizing that I can still make progress and do well in the sport while my training looks different.
That's good. And I also, the beauty in powerlifting and sports like strongman too is you recognize, I guess, since we're not so much in a team environment, like you will always only be competing against yourself. And if you do great, great, then that's a personal record. Or, you know, just like constantly building and strengthening like your core and yourself as an athlete, as opposed to always winning. Because even in powerlifting, there's gray area, you know, so taking that from the real world into your sport is also like pretty good.
Yeah. And I think I take a lot from the sport into my real life, you know, like the work, like you have to put in the mundane work in order to, you know, see the results. And sometimes, you know, when I'm sitting there like, oh, I really don't want to go to work today, but I got to do the mundane work in order to see the results, to get, you know, whatever I need, keep my health insurance. So I think like taking those aspects too from the sport, and then also just like the mental strength comes from training regularly, you know, of putting yourself towards something over and over again, and committing to that has really helped me mentally just have a goal that I'm working towards outside of anything else, and have that excitement to like go work towards that and do something hard, not every day, but a lot of days of the week and year. And it reminds me that I'm capable of doing hard things even when I feel like I'm not.
And outside of mental health and powerlifting, is there like any sort of equipment that you find most comfortable using with your scoliosis, like powerlifting belts, especially with the deadlift?
Yeah, honestly, I haven't felt like I've needed to really use any special equipment. The biggest thing that I've noticed with my current belt is that it might be like slightly too wide, because my rib cage and hips are kind of close. I have like a short torso, obviously. Mm-hmm. And so like it kind of like digs into like my, it's hard to like fit it in between. So that's like the only thing that I would probably maybe get a, like a, I think they have smaller ones. I don't really know.
Ones. It's tough though if you're in certain federations that only allow you to have certain brands or whatever. Yeah. There are those thinner ones, especially for the short torso folks.
Oh yeah, but otherwise,
same thing for me.
Yeah, it's hard. It's weird because it's like, well, I gotta,
I put it on and then I slide it off my wrist.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, exactly. The big thing outside of it though is like recovery tools. Like, you know, when I'm in the gym, all of the normal stuff is fine, but like really making sure that I have good recovery tools. So I think I have probably like 5 million things, but the thing that is the most useful is just like a, one of those circular foam rollers that you can like go up and down your back. Like that has been a lifesaver for me just to help those muscles a little bit. You know, regular massages when I can do them, kind of like not right now, but eventually, and I mean, they are expensive as well, so that's not always feasible. Like baths sometimes help. Anything that really can just like help relax the muscles, because that's really the toughest thing. But otherwise inside the gym, I mean, I'm trying to think if there's any exercises. Like I obviously just avoid pretty much conventional deadlifts because it just hurts my back. And then there's certain exercises with like my upper back that if they just hurt, I just don't do them. I'm like, there's 5 million exercises I can do. If it hurts my back, I'll just pick a different one. So I can't even really remember what any of those exercises are anymore.
Because as soon as I you're already done with those.
Yeah, as soon as I do it, I'm like, okay, I'm not doing this anymore.
So you figured it out for your deadlift. What about squat and bench? Did you have to go through a whole journey with a coach, or did you kind of just find a way to move that clicked right away?
Yeah, bench has been its own process. It never hurt my back. It's just, you know, bench is hard one. It's very technical. So I mean, I had the same coach for all of my lift, or for I still use him, train with him, and so he's helped me make my technique better. I honestly never really had issues with squat, which I was kind of surprised by. And like the biggest thing that is important is for me is just like making sure I'm bracing well. And I think that's important for everybody, obviously, but just really stabilizing it. And I think that I do have a slightly different like situation. Obviously everybody's scoliosis is very different. And I feel like kind of fortunate sometimes because my scoliosis is actually very even. So the curves are like the exact same on both sides. So my hips and shoulders are pretty level.
What?
I know, it's so weird.
Your body's
so,
like, I'm sorry, Cass, we got this.
So it's like this part is like even, and then the curve is just like in between these two planes.
I think we saw an x-ray.
Yeah.
It's like a full S shape.
Right. So it kind of works out because I don't have any like really big, like, you know, when I hold the bar, it's not like it's a little crooked, but it's not crazy crooked. Or I don't have like very uneven like legs because of my hips are very even. So
yeah, that's the biggest thing that most folks probably have to deal with is the uneven.
The uneven hips, and I fortunately have not had to deal with that, so I don't really have any tips for that. But the biggest thing that's honestly helped me with scoliosis is physical therapy. And I'm sure, I know I talked to you about it before. And like, honestly, I physical therapy has helped me an insane amount, because I've gone probably 3 or 4 times. I try to go like every year or two, just kind of like a tune up, like, I'm kind of in pain. Like, can you help me out? Always happy to help, you know? So I appreciate it.
That's awesome.
Like dry needling I've had done, which is pretty helpful. Mm. Yeah, there's like a ton of different things that that can help for sure.
In the bench, do you find yourself arching more, arching less, flat back benching?
Yeah, I mean, I have like a very slight arch. Anything more than that hurts. I would love to have a big bench because my arms are crazy long. So it's a very long range of motion. But, you know, obviously I'd rather just keep benching and not hurt my back. So I do a slight arch, like the, you know, my shoulders kind of on the bench tight, and then that just whatever my natural arch is. And yeah, that works for me. I haven't really had any issues with it. There's like, I do find a little bit of issues sometimes in my shoulders because it is not even in my upper back. So when I'm tightening my upper back and lats, it could be a little uneven. So I'm pushing a little bit unevenly. That's just something that's taken a lot of, honestly, I think dumbbell bench press has helped a ton with that to help even out the imbalances on both sides. So yeah. Unilateral work to try to make both sides as strong as each other is the big, I think the biggest thing with scoliosis is just a ton of unilateral work.
Do any of your PTs like watch as you kind of go through the movements? Because one of my older gyms, Oakland over here, had a biomechanics specialist like on deck. And so me, with a lot of my like asymmetrical, like I'm always overcompensating on the left side because my left arm is shorter than my right. And then all these issues with my back, like he kind of helped me, I don't know, hip hinge a little better, know like how to breathe and brace correctly so that it was more even in the squat, especially. I wonder if that would be, you know, helpful if your PT or whoever works with you like watches as you bench, or is like a lot more technical and mechanical when they watch you. Since powerlifting is going to be like, you know, in your life for quite some time.
Right. I have never done that, but that would be pretty cool. So
yeah, not just like watching as you sit or watching as you stand, but also watching as you go through the three movements was helpful for me.
Yeah, I've never, yeah, I only have my coach watches me, but I've never had any like sort of like analysis like that, which would be, I think, kind of reminds me similar of like, because I was a runner for a long time. So the running, whenever getting sized for shoes, watching you run and see how you land on your feet, stuff like that.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Sounds like a similar concept. But I guess if your coach is pretty good at figuring out mechanics on different bodies and you work with them for a while and they get to know you, they might be able to figure that out. But if they can't, nothing wrong with finding someone else.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, you could pay more than one person if your budget's good for it. You know, you don't just fire everyone.
Always good to have more eyes on your, you know, movement patterns.
Mm-hmm. You posted, I don't know if you've gone only once or more than once, but for mental health management, sorry for switching this a little bit, but I'm so curious about this, what's it called? Transcranial magnetic stimulation.
Yeah, totally.
What does that involve? Is your brain getting shock therapy? Are we going back into the 70s? What are we doing?
Yeah, I'm excited to talk about this, actually. So, yeah, TMS is it's like a newer treatment, I believe. So the one you're talking about, the shock therapy, that's ECT. I don't know what that stands for, but it's electrical shock.
Electroconvulsive your brain. Therapy, maybe.
Yeah. And so that one is more intense because you have to be in the hospital. They have to put you under actually, and they like actually put like, they give you like mini seizures essentially. And it's effective. It just, there's some negative side effects, and then just the process is a lot more difficult. So that's
actually still happening? Hold on a second.
Yes, that is still happening.
I was not aware. Okay, carry on. Sorry.
Yeah, so that is, yeah, that's a thing. I know people who have done that, and it's a little scary. So this is an alternative option. It's outpatient. So I did a 6-week treatment or somewhere around there where it was 5 days a week. For those 6 weeks. And then basically it's, you go and you sit down in this chair, kind of like a dentist chair or whatever. It was just at my psychiatrist's doctor office. So, you know, I'm already used to going there. And then they kind of have, I think it's different. They do different, you know, procedures. But the one I did was they essentially have this like machine and they put magnetic pulses in your brain. And so they stimulate it in various parts, depending on what, where the doctor says. And my session, my treatments were literally 3 minutes. So I would go in there, spend 3 minutes in this treatment, and then I would leave and do that 5 days a week for 6 weeks. And it didn't hurt really at all, except for like towards the end, they started doing a couple pulses like here, and then you can like feel it like in your eye, like sort of like
hit your sinus or something maybe.
Yeah, it's almost like, I don't know exactly where, but you feel like an intense like twitch behind your eye, I guess. It's very uncomfortable, but all the other ones didn't really, there wasn't any pain. It was just weird. There was a couple times where my hand was like twitching just because a certain area it's in, and then your hand just like twitches with it, which is kind of cool. So yeah, the idea is just to help stimulate underactive areas of the brain. So kind of in a similar way, just using magnets instead of electricity. You know, it's kind of annoying. It's ridiculous. Oh my God, talking about health insurance. So in order to be able to get this treatment, you have to have failed a certain amount of medications prior, and you had to have seen a therapist for a year. And
I'm sure they all had to write like letters and letters and letters for you also.
Yes. Even though this is a safer treatment, there's like hardly any side effects. Like I think the only side effect they told me about was like headache, and you're not like ingesting anything like a antidepressant. So that's a little frustrating because, you know, I just don't understand why insurance has anything to do with the treatment that your doctor decides on. That's a huge annoyance of the mental healthcare industry for me, because it's the same thing with antidepressants. So I've been on several different ones. Obviously, I did TMS, so I had to fail a few because I started taking them in like 2014 or somewhere around there. And, you know, it's like they work and then it stops working. So they put you on another one and they have to go through this process. So they have to start with like an SSRI, which is serotonin,
selective serotonin, yeah, something
inhibitor. Reuptake inhibitor.
Yeah, there it is.
Yeah. And then, you know, you have to try a couple of those. And then if those fail, then you can move to this one. And then if those fail, you can move to this one. So there's like this whole process that insurance requires your doctor to go through, which is so frustrating because, like, if they, I don't know, it's just like, the doctor should be able to choose what medication they think is going to work best for you and not have insurance exactly go through
and waste your time, because you have to keep going back and trying something over and starting over, and then you have to go back, pay another copay. Like all that money they thought they could save wasn't just a waste of time anyway.
Totally.
It's like the more that I deal with health insurance as a provider and as a patient, it's just like they just put as many hurdles as possible, so you just give up. Honestly.
Totally. It's infuriating. And then another thing that I recently realized with my insurance, I have great insurance. I'm very fortunate because, you know, I know a lot of people wouldn't be able to even get the treatment that I'm receiving. So I feel really grateful for that. But, you know, just thinking of like the whole, like everybody in general who has health insurance, like, you know, for mine, it's separate. My mental health insurance is separate from my regular insurance, kind of. So like, even though I've hit my deductible, I still have to pay $10 every single mental health session that I go to. So nothing else, no other doctor I would go to, I'd have to pay money except for my mental health one. I don't know how that makes any sense at all, but you know, that's insurance. And I know it's been that way on other insurance plans I've been on, where the mental health, you have to pay more usually, which I don't know.
It just makes no sense. It makes no sense at all. I don't get it. Like, who makes up these rules? Like, I can't get, if I want to see a chiropractor, I have to pay cash on my insurance. But yet, because I'm a dependent on a military insurance, if I was a veteran, I could go to the VA and then they would pay for the chiropractor. Who decided that made sense?
Yeah, like, some of the rules are just...
I'm telling you, just hurdles.
Yeah.
So you just don't... So nobody bills and they don't have to pay out.
Yeah. So TMS was six weeks, and then I have to do regular sessions every so often. So I actually have one tomorrow, and then I'll have one in another few weeks. So I'll have to do that pretty regularly until we'll probably do another 6 week session in about 6 months or so, when insurance allows you to do another session of treatment.
So what do you use to prove to the insurance that it's worth it? Like, is there just some like questionnaire that you fill out before and after, or are they just writing more letters again? Like, how are you going to get it reapproved?
Yeah, I think you have to take like that P8, PQ9 or whatever the assessment is, whatever depression testing, I don't know what it is, like PHQ9 or something like that.
Questionnaire.
Yeah, it's like a questionnaire. And then each session I would rate like how I was doing that. So from my last session. So every single day I'd kind of go in and answer some more questions on top of the before and after. And then I think they also submit all of my records, like medications, you know, sessions with my psychiatrist, all that sort of stuff. So.
And yeah. The 6 weeks of TMS, you're off of all of your antidepressants, right?
No, I'm still taking all of those.
Oh, jeez.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So yeah, I'm doing that on top of, and I'm actually right now I'm on 4 different medications, which is a lot. And it all of a sudden, like at the beginning of this year, it just kept feeling like they just kept adding on top of mm-hmm. Be like, oh, let's try this one. And because like this year, I mean, it was hard for a lot of people, but I definitely felt I definitely was struggling this year along with everybody else. And instead of taking them away, the biggest thing is like, we just want you to feel better. So, you know, they added because they were like, we don't want to take this away and then you feel worse. And so that's kind of where we're at right now, is we just added a bunch. So I'm on 2 different antidepressants. I'm on a mood stabilizer, and I actually got added Ritalin, which I was pretty surprised by, because I didn't realize that was a treatment for depression. It actually can be a very successful treatment for treatment-resistant depression. It wouldn't be like a first course action, especially since it's a super controlled substance. But it's helped a ton, because if you think about it, like, you know, Ritalin's prescribed for like concentrating and focus, and a ton of symptoms of depression are not being able to focus, not having concentration, foggy minded, you know, no energy, all that sort of thing, which mm-hmm. the Ritalin helps. So yeah, it's not, you know, I wouldn't necessarily want to be taking 4 medications, but I'm feeling better with the TMS too, that I'm just like, you know what?
I'll take whatever you tell me. And at this point, they're not in a position to reject any of these medications, because you're basically at the top tier now. You made it to TMS.
Right?
Made it to the top, baby.
I've tried them all.
They're like, we're already paying so much for this one. So give her all of it.
Whatever she wants.
But I do understand like the tiresome process of mental health in insurance, because even through like this year, and people who have never had therapists or seen a psychologist in their life now need it more than ever. And, you know, my insurance is Kaiser. I don't know what yours or others are, but even that you have to qualify for. And they're like, first phone session, they're like, well, I don't think you qualify for a therapist right now because you're not diagnosed. And I'm like, well, I've never been diagnosed because I've never seen a therapist or a psychologist. Like, well, I think I can put you down for anxiety and depression, or like vague of things to start off with, and then from there find like some diagnoses through
nail something down just right. to prove that you need to go.
Well, prove that like you qualify to talk to somebody and they will pay for those sessions. Like you still have to pay that $10 copay, but
that is
so are dumb. You worth
that doesn't make any sense a mental because health. Like you don't have everybody to have a diagnosis to
see exactly
everyone.
I'm always like, I don't care. Yeah, everybody needs a therapist. Like everybody has problems. It doesn't matter if you have a illness or not.
Not according to healthcare. Not according to the health industry. And they send you all these ads saying, you know, a therapist is so important now when you're overloading on work and taking care of kids. But sorry, you actually don't qualify. I take that back.
Oh, that's maddening. So yeah, there's so many interesting things with not interesting, stupid things with insurance. It's a more appropriate word. I remember I had a therapist and we were doing 50-minute sessions, which is regular. And she was like, "Oh, I got these letters from your insurance that rejected all of our sessions because you're only allowed 45 minutes, not 50 minutes." I was like, "Are you serious?"
Oh, you don't even get the full hour.
Yeah, right. Well, yeah, I don't know. And so she's like, "It's okay, I'll just change in the system." But I was like, that doesn't 5 minutes? 5 minutes. Yeah, it's maddening. I don't know if it's gonna get any better.
We'll find out. Hopefully everyone gets their vote on, and then you know, we just keep cracking the whip.
Oh yeah.
And do our best there. Big yikes.
Yeah,
even worse for the folks that have the insurance where you have to see your primary first no matter what. Like that's some bullshit.
Oh my like, god,
why have to go to somebody else, pay them, waste my time so they could tell the insurance let her go, and then I gotta go pay someone else again, waste my time. I could have skipped the middleman.
Mm-hmm. Yep,
bullshit.
It doesn't make any sense.
Some bullshit. Ugh. Anyways, so I mean, we talked about a lot with scoliosis and powerlifting. We didn't really get into body image or diet culture or fat phobia or anything like that, because I'm sure that is something all of us go through in terms of our disabled bodies, in terms of just walking into a gym. So maybe we could do that again next time. So,
yeah, I feel like that could be a whole another hour.
Yeah, that could be a whole nother thing. So I guess before we nip this in the bud, what would you give to someone as general advice? Like, where should they start for both ends, for mental health or disability or anything, just a person? Like, where should you start?
I think starting is, I don't know, just going and talking to somebody. And the first person you talk to is most likely not going to be the last person you talk to. But I think just going and starting and having that initial conversation with a provider is so important to get some sort of information and just start having that conversation. It's going to be a pain in the ass. And I think just going and preparing, knowing it's going to be a pain in the ass is a way to start. And just don't give up. You know, there will be a provider out there who will listen. It might take a while to find one, but there is somebody out there who will. And just keep advocating for yourself. Your symptoms are real, even if there isn't a diagnosis for them. So keep advocating for yourself because you are worth it. And it's gonna be hard. It's gonna be hard, but it's gonna be worth it too.
Yeah, all very, very wise words.
Yeah. I like that you mentioned that your first person's not going to be your last, because I know a lot of people who have mental health issues only rely on that one best friend or that one, you know, family member, and find themselves unloading on just that one person. Finding a balance and finding other sources to right. kind of heal with is absolutely important.
Yeah,
and you can trust more than one.
See someone, like your first person's not going to be amazingly right for you, and if they're not, that's okay. So that's a great point to bring up.
Thank you.
Takes work, just like everything else. All right, so we'll do this again sometime, but for now, disabled girls out.
Thanks for listening to Disabled Girls Who Left. We appreciate all of your support and everyone who's taken the time to show us some love. Don't forget to subscribe, rate, or write a review of our channel. We're on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Player FM, Google Podcasts, and more. You can also find us on Instagram @DisabledGirlsWhoLift.